trapped in three separate realities.
I'm moving back and forth through time.
Putting the lives of his entire crew at risk.
What you're asking for is impossible.
Picard must stop the greatest threat to mankind.
Red alert! All crew to battle stations.
In a deadly showdown with his most powerful enemy.
Humanity's fate has been sealed. You will be destroyed.
Next time on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton reporting for duty.
And we have a very special guest. Recently unstuck from time, Tony Galoosh.
Hi, everyone. Great to be back.
Well, it's great to have you on, Tony. This is officially our 100th episode. Monumental.
Is it?
Officially.
Officially.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're too kind.
You're standing in for all of our listeners out there.
Just loop that clap.
Yes. Well, and I think, you know, we wanted to do something special, but instead we're going to give you a review... of all good things.
Right, but before we get to that, we've got some Star Trek 4 news.
What? The Voyage Home?
Yes.
I can't wait.
They're remastering it. No, that's not actually true. They'll do it in time for the next Star Trek 4.
Good.
Which, there's been a bombshell drop just the last couple days, coincidentally right before the opening of Star Trek Beyond, that Star Trek 4 is pretty much a go, says J.J. Abrams. And that it will feature the return of Chris Hemsworth as George Kirk.
Oh, it's the meeting of the Chrises.
Does this feel like a, we swear to God, we've got a big star in our next one kind of move?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. No, the favorite headline that I came across today was along the lines of, like, Captain Kirk must go back in time to meet his hot father.
Right.
So, you know, look, they got a great coup when they landed him. Chris Hemsworth, you know, 7 years ago.
Yeah, right before Thor.
Yeah, so, hey, it makes sense. If you can get him into the series, why not?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, for sure, if you can loop him back in, it definitely will add a few million dollars. I don't know how many, because, I mean, In the Heart of the Sea wasn't such a blockbuster or a rush or pretty much any other Chris Hemsworth movie.
But, Ghostbusters.
Through
the roof, man.
Sure. But I think it's interesting that they're going to do the fourth one and possibly involving time travel.
Well, hey, how else do you get to meet one George Kirk unless it's a clone? Instead of Shinzon, it's, I don't know, Georgeson or something.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I read a really interesting editorial today on Birth, Movies, Death by Devin Faraci. He was talking about it and he said...
Devin!
He feels like the only reason to bring him back is to end the series. In that they loop back... Stop the destruction of Kelvin and the series is done.
Okay, I think that's silliness.
You think so?
Pure silliness.
But why?
Oh, because it's a money train for Paramount.
It's not a money train.
Yes,
it's
no. BS, bro. No, it is.
Even he says in the article, he's like, this is not doing what Paramount wants it to do.
Doesn't matter. It's still making bucket loads of money. What else does Paramount have when it comes to sci-fi franchises?
Star Trek The Next Generation, the reboot.
There you go. Okay.
Is that going to happen?
I think it'll happen eventually.
Eventually. But here's the thing. This is a dependable moneymaker so far for the first two films.
Right.
This one's tracking well. It's going to open in Asia. They just confirmed it for September. It made Into Darkness made $60 million last go in China.
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine that's going to go up this time. Cam, they're not going to end the series. Why? Because, you know, the why? Why would they end the series?
Why not?
No, but why would they? Tell me.
That the cast gets more and more expensive.
Yeah, and the Paramount's not losing any money here.
They're more concerned about critical acclaim than money.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, they are a very honorable studio.
They want to end on a high note.
Yes.
Money be damned.
Okay. Well, Cam, I'm not
saying that that's the reality. I'm saying, like, I kind of agree with this article. Like, I was like, I would like that.
Okay, there's a difference between thinking it's a good idea versus actually thinking it's a remote possibility.
Oh, no, he doesn't think it's a possibility. He's saying that's what they should do.
Oh, that's what they should do.
Yes.
Okay, well, I thought you were trying to defend his
honor. No. He's not saying that's what's going to be doing. He's saying that's what they should do.
Okay, well, I don't know. As long as they have good stories to tell, I like this crew.
Yeah.
You know, we'll see how Star Trek Beyond works out. The reviews right now, we're just a mere hours from watching it.
Mm-hmm.
The reviews are through the roof at this point.
Yeah,
so I'm very, very much looking forward to it. Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll have our review, I guess, next episode.
Yes.
Very exciting.
Spoiler alert.
I hear most of the movie just explaining the last movie.
That's what Star Trek does best, exposition. And I think we'll dive into that a little bit later on this evening.
Yes, so I think now we'll dive into All Good Things. Now, All Good Things. Uh-oh, we got another incoming alert.
Well, it turns out that Netflix is going to have exclusive rights to stream Star Trek 2017 outside of US and Canada. So, Americans, you're going to have to go through CBS All Access, and Canadians, you can either watch it on Space, or else you'll be able to catch up a little bit later on Crave TV.
Right.
Cam, is this enough to convince you to get a Crave TV subscription? First month is free.
If it's... Well, I would consider it if I can... I don't know. If it pops up on iTunes, no way, because I'll just pay the, $20, $25 for the full season.
Yeah.
But if that's not the case, then I guess so.
I don't think it will go up on iTunes. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the CBS's deal is. I mean, CBS puts a lot of their shows on iTunes, so I don't... But it'll depend what their deal is with their CBS All Access, how that complicates matters.
I think it's the licensing that they have to do with Bell.
Yeah.
And I don't see Bell investing so much money into all this if it's going to be on iTunes just hours later.
Right.
So, yeah, there you go. I don't know. I already have Crave TV. I think it's kind of a crappy platform, a little unstable. But the content-wise, it's solid. It has all the Star Trek series on it. And I'm watching the O.J. Simpson documentary right now, which is really good. So
does it have all the episodes of Golden Palace?
You know what? No, but it does have Joni Loves Chachi, which
really?
I've been catching up. Cam, I kid. I don't know.
No? Oh, jeez. Isn't that ABC?
Sure.
I think that was ABC.
If that was the channel that Happy Days aired on, then
I think it was.
Okay.
I think it was the General Telecom Communications Network in 1912.
Edison.
What about Small Wonder?
Oh, with Vicky the robot?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey.
Is that our segue back to All Good Things in Data?
Yes, exactly. So there's your Star Trek news for the week.
I'll consider Crave. Depends what it's available on. What about you, Tony? Would you sign up for Crave to watch new episodes of Star Trek?
No.
No? Okay. Right. Well.
I don't even have Netflix, to be honest.
Yeah, I do, and I don't use it.
Well, are you going to watch new episodes of Star Trek on cable? Do you have the Space Channel on your cable package?
To be perfectly honest, I don't even own a television.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't have cable, so.
That's why they want people to be... Look, if we're... whole society of cord cutters, that's why they want to give people options to stream it. So
I just want a Pirate Bay and chill.
There you go.
Okay, well, let's move on to All Good Things. This is the big finale to all of TNG. They had a lot to live up to writing this episode.
Yeah, because it was such an explosive season 7.
I like a lot of season 7.
Mm.
I was just rewatching Phantasms today. I was having a great old time.
Okay, not Bloodlines?
Not Bloodlines.
Well, there you go.
But why don't we talk about the first time we saw this episode? Because this was quite a television event when it transpired.
Mm-hmm.
Tony, what was your first experience watching All Good Things?
Oh, I remember being a little bit... sad that the Next Generation was ending, but I thought it ended on a high note. I remember being like, wow, that was... I haven't seen an episode that good since Encounter at Farpoint.
I want to go back to Tony for just a second. Were you watching it like in the mid-90s, like as it aired that night, or did you catch up on it a few years later?
No, I watched it when it first aired.
Nice.
I forget. I think it came on right after Jeopardy or something like that.
Yeah. Did you watch the retrospective featuring Jonathan Frakes and taking you on a tour of the bridge? And
You know what? I probably did, but that one didn't stick in my mind quite as well.
What about Alien Autopsy, Fact or Fiction?
Did we really land on the moon, Tony?
Well, you can tell, right? Because, I mean, the flag is waving and there's no wind on the moon.
Right.
Yes. Well, for myself, I distinctly recall my sister and I, who's been a guest on the show before, we sat down, we watched it together. It was a big deal because we were allowed to stay up past our bedtime to watch the second part of it.
Weren't you 22?
Yes. bedtime was at 6 p.m. It's very strict upbringing. But, you know, I remember just so many moments just laughing and then, like, looking at the clock and saying, oh, man, they only have 45 minutes left to wrap up this whole thing.
Right.
Only 12 minutes left, you know? So there's a little bit of anxiety on my part. But I just remember being delighted by just so many reveals. Like, hey, there's Tasha Yar. I haven't seen her since reruns.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It was a real great event. And I think as a kid, maybe you could be easily pleased by what happens. And I think it's later on that I came to appreciate the finale all the more, knowing how difficult it is to do a finale correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my experience is, my first experience watching it, it's kind of hazy.
Okay.
I remember when it aired, it was a big deal. Like, friends I had who didn't necessarily watch TNG that much were like, we have to watch this. This is an appointment show. And I remember my mom even was watching it. And so I can't remember if my first time seeing it was taping it the night it was on and then rewatching it maybe the next day.
Okay.
Or seeing it in syndication shortly after.
So it was like you would have seen it in the 90s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Either the night, you know, the day after it aired or pretty quickly after with syndication. One or the other. But I do remember, like, I was a very, very casual watcher of it when it was syndicated. And I remember not being a huge fan of Q episodes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I like them a lot more now. But at the time, they just didn't really do anything for me. I liked the more action-packed stuff, like the Borg episodes and stuff. But,
Well, that was a Q episode.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I ever saw that one.
All right.
From season two. When I saw All Good Things, I really enjoyed it, I remember. And it actually did mean something to me, like, it wasn't one that depended on my watching the entire series to feel kind of touched by the end of it.
Were you disappointed that there was not a Q pun in the title of this episode?
I don't even really think I paid attention to episode titles. I think I knew the name Best of Both Worlds. I feel like that's probably the only one I knew.
Okay. I actually, I always paid attention to the episode titles.
Well, bully for you.
Yeah.
But I remember also being very aware at the time of how often series finales sucked. I had been burned big time by the ending of Who's the Boss?
Right, yeah.
And I remember the Full House ending was awful. I think the Groink...
didn't Michelle get amnesia from a horse accident?
Yeah. And then I remember the Groin Pains one wasn't very good.
So sorry, the Full House finale was awful.
Yeah.
Like, objectively or just compared to the rest of the series?
I don't remember.
I'd say even compared with the rest of the series is pretty bad.
And I can't remember which...
Michelle fell off a horse and got amnesia.
And I can't remember which aired first, the ending to TNG or the ending to Roseanne?
The ending to TNG.
TNG, okay, well...
Roseanne is bad.
Well, didn't Roseanne kind of end a season or two before the season finale? Or the series finale?
Well, yes, it did. But I remember, yeah... So
yeah, the last season was all in her mind.
It was awful.
Ugh.
But so I remember being very aware, watching TNG, that I knew, like, a lot of the finales I'd seen really sucked, and they were always my least favorite episodes.
What did you think about the Cheers finale?
I didn't like it. As a kid, I was like, that is so lame.
Yeah.
As an adult, I can understand it more, but at the time, I was like, that is not what I want from a finale.
I have the same feeling, too. As a kid, I was just rather put off by it, but now I can appreciate it more, so.
Yeah.
I like how you've just exclusively held up the Next Generation finale to a series of sitcoms.
Yeah.
I mean...
Well, I don't know. Were you watching, say, Diagnosis Murder that much when you were a young one?
No, Saying Elsewhere?
There was a lot of Hercules, a lot of Xena.
Yeah.
What else was on that?
Like, this was the...
Time Tracks?
I think this is, like, the first one-hour drama that I was actually into, like, as a kid.
I think this was the first one I watched, and then shortly after would come, like, Time Tracks and Kung Fu The Legend Continues.
I remember my parents watching the finale of L.A. Law, and I didn't care. It was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So.
So, yeah, I was very aware that this was definitely, like, a very... strong
what about
example.
Beachcombers?
Beachcombers. Oh, Beachcombers, yeah, that's right.
I never watched it, I only read a book.
Or Danger Bay.
Danger Bay, hey.
These are very Canadian references.
Yeah. What about The Littlest Hobo?
Sequest.
Sequest never ended in my mind.
It just keeps going around the globe.
So let's get to this rewatch. Tony, why don't you start?
What do you think of the series finale of Sequest? That's what we were supposed to rewatch just now, right, guys?
Yeah, that's right. Well, I liked how they dropped Worf in at 30,000 leagues. No, I thought this was really good. It kind of had the Next Generation. I think what I said after I watched it was, there's a problem that we don't understand that we can only solve with a solution that we
don't understand.
Don't understand.
Yeah.
But I liked it. I really liked the you get to see where all the characters that you've kind of been with for the last 7 years, where they go 30 years later. As far as being
how do you think they've aged? Compared with where they are today.
Well, they're actually probably better looking today.
Yeah.
Dude, it seems like plastic surgery in 2016 is better than makeup in 1990.
Yeah, I've had some close encounters, and I can attest to the fact that I think some of those actors have received some plastic surgery.
Brent Spiner is Shameless.
No, I know. Yeah.
I think Jonathan Frakes dreams of having hair like he has in this finale.
That's true. He was calling himself, I think he was calling himself like the new Captain Picard based on his haircut when we saw him in Seattle a few years back.
Yeah, he's got a flying saucer down from the top.
But yeah, go on, Tony. I mean, what do you think was one of the strongest points in the finale? You brought up seeing where the crew can go. Was it interesting to you to see where they started off?
No, because we already knew that.
Okay.
Right? we already, we'd already seen that show.
Right.
But I mean, it was good. I mean, I liked how they brought it off. It was, nice to see Cole Meany and Denise Crosby.
Yeah, still fitting into those uniforms, skin tight ones.
Pop it out.
Cole Meany.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good, for the series to have started with John DeLancey and to have him come back. I thought it was a nice closing of the circle.
Could it have been any other story? I just think that he was such a mainstay of the series. He was in the premiere. I don't know. It would have been a tough sell not.
I think the only alternate would have been a Borg-centric ending because TNG became so famous for the Borg. And that the Borg time, the Battle of Wolf 359 was going to be in an original version of the finale. It was going to be a fourth timeline.
Oh, yeah, that's correct.
But it ended up being cut out. That was an initial draft. But that's the only alternative to Q, I think, is a Borg. But the Q thing works perfectly because it's a bookmark with the first episode.
Yeah.
And I like how it kind of established that really the finale was just the finale and beyond was just a continuation really of the first episode.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, the trial never ends.
The trial never ends.
Is that true?
Well, I think they ended up closing up that studio and yeah.
Did the trial continue into Voyager or Deep Space Nine?
Nope. And not into the movie series either, which I was, Cam and I, we've discussed this before, how we just assumed after the Borg in First Contact that the follow-up, which turned into Insurrection, that's obviously going to be a Q film.
Or at least Nemesis, because Insurrection was so underwhelming.
Yeah,
like,
why not?
You'd think they'd be like, let's charge back with Q.
Let's bring back like a fan favorite. Like, that'll get people in their seats, like mainstream audiences back in the seats again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they never did it just baffles me. There must have been this idea, like, say, oh no, we want to do new stuff. And I'm just like, oh, okay, well, new stuff equals Picard as a younger man, at, his Nemesis? I don't know. It seems, or... Benign.
Well, I think John DeLancey was busy with Briscoe County Jr. and
checks
quite make it
to cash. I get it. Cam, what was your reaction watching a few years later? Now, I guess 22 years or so later.
Brandon Braga has often talked about how, and Rick Berman have talked about how the finale to Enterprise, These Are the Voyages, was supposed to be a Valentine for fans.
Yeah,
I feel like this is a Valentine for fans. You get to see, as you stated earlier, what could happen in the future of these characters. We get to see Picard and Crusher kind of get together. There's a kiss and whatever, but then, we find out they were married. You kind of get a future as to what could these characters, what kind of future they could lead.
Troy could die.
Right. And then we also get to see a flashback to Encounter Farpoint. It's like kind of hitting all those bases that fans love.
Well, Tony doesn't care about that flashback Encounter and Farpoint, but I thought it was delightful.
Yeah, no, it was nice to see in there. But I was both when I watched it originally and now, I'm just more interested in, seeing how these characters relate to each other. 25 years down the road.
But what about like Picard's reaction when Data and O'Brien are going at it about what burning midnight oil means? And like Picard's just standing back looking at like a 7 years younger Data, just kind of chuckling to himself. Like he's seen how much that android has grown over the years, which I don't know. I think that's a real nice nod to kind of the overarching character development that we did see in a series that was, you know, rather episodic.
I mean, it's fun to see Worf back in a red uniform and see, as you said, Yar back on the ship. Like, I just love seeing that stuff. It's really cool to see. And Troy in her, like, episode one uniform.
Yeah. I was kind of surprised, though. Data, his rank was weird in the flashback episodes. He was a junior lieutenant.
Apparently that was a screw-up.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go.
I was surprised they didn't bring back Mark Twain.
Yeah. Or, you know, I'm surprised they didn't try and kind of explain around. Okay, I guess Wesley wasn't on the ship yet.
Yeah, he was left behind at Farpoint.
Yeah, okay. Well, so
it would have been great if they had a 22-year-old Will Wheaton walking around in that rainbow sweater.
That would have been amazing.
Yeah, you know, we're like, hey, guys!
At 22, he's talking like that?
Yeah.
He's like 5 o'clock shadow.
Even like the teenager from The Simpsons. It's like, that would have been awesome. That would have been a great, you know, callback.
Right.
Okay.
So let's get into what works. I think there's a lot that works. Why don't you start, Tony?
Well, I think we've touched on a lot of it there. I mean, I really like the fact that you get to see where the characters have gone. I like that Jean-Luc Picard has lost most of his diplomacy. He's just like a cranky old guy.
Did we all kind of see that as being the eventual state of Picard?
I know.
Really?
I never pictured that was the inevitable, you know, destiny for Picard to become like, I'm being Samuel Clemens now with how I talk.
I talk low and then high.
I don't know, he kind of seemed like a caricature.
Yeah, well,
you have to admit,
that's what old people are.
You have to admit though that Patrick Stewart did a better job playing old than the guy who played Mark Twain did.
Oh yeah. I mean, I actually think his performance as old Picard is actually really I find it quite endearing.
Okay, wow. Okay, spoiler alert, I'll go into it in more detail later on, but that was something I listed as what doesn't work.
Really?
Yeah, but anyways, go on, tell me why
liked it. I mean, this is an old Picard who's been ravaged by illness, and I think he has, like, moments of dignity. I guess you don't agree.
Moments of dignity?
Moments. I mean, you know, I think it's a very tragic future Picard. This is a very sad future as to what could happen to him.
And you think that this is where he's meant to go?
No.
You just said that, though. You said, isn't this how you always pictured where Picard would end up?
Well, as old and cranky. Not necessarily deranged.
I think the best performance here is when, at the very end, Riker and Crusher, they're sitting on the bridge in the revamped Enterprise.
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart, the way he's sitting, it looks like how every old person sits, with just kind of leaning back and then, like, you know, like their pants just kind of hanging loose. And I was just like, he's got old person down right there in that brief moment.
There is an amazing moment where he, like, sits there, he's like,
oh yes, Worf.
Yes.
Like, it's some great line deliveries from one Patrick Stewart. I'll give him that, but I'll go into my thoughts deeper later on.
You didn't kind of get the sadness of this version of Picard, though. Like, I think he did.
I thought it was sad.
I thought he did a fantastic job communicating that. What about you, Tony?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it was my, you know, where I would expect Jean-Luc Picard to be. Like, you know, you in an episode like that, you kind of expect them to focus more on the time when he's an admiral and focus on his exploits and all the people who think he's awesome and he's being canonized in Starfleet Academy. And all that's kind of behind him, and now he's just an old, you know, nearly forgotten.
But is that the future of any captain? Eventually you're going to age out of Starfleet and you are going to retire. You know, it makes sense to me that he'd be back on the Vineyard and that people would be coming by, but it's not like, you know, you'd be 95 and still, you know, the prize of Starfleet.
Yeah, well, Kirk had to learn that the hard way. He ends up chopping wood.
Yeah, every captain has to face their own mortality, as we've seen.
Well, yeah, I guess Sisko kind of avoided it by jumping into a pit of fire.
There you go. So he was the smart one.
Yeah.
That's right. Live fast, die young, and live forever.
Yeah.
What about one young George Kirk, who was the captain of the Kelvin for approximately 4 minutes?
Right. Or, you know, how did, you know, elderly Janeway turn out?
I don't know. Oh, you mean from Endgame?
Yeah, I mean,
laying on the floor with a Borg queen.
Yeah, like it doesn't go so well. I feel like in old age for the captains.
Yeah,
I mean, your glory days only last so long, and I think there's a real sadness to that character in this version of the future of Picard.
Well, I thought there's nothing wrong with him just hanging out at a vineyard. You know, when he's trying to recapture his glory days, that's when it kind of gets sad.
Well,
it was a little sad. I mean, you know, we can get into it when we talk like the weaker points, but I thought that really the fact that everyone was still kind of willing to follow him around without any evidence at all.
Yeah.
You wouldn't take his word, though, if he was your captain for so long?
Not if he has a neurological disorder.
Yeah, and he's just convinced and kind of confused and keeps saying, I see people everywhere.
We've got to get to neutral zone.
We've got to take a ship into a war zone.
Get your static warp shell up.
No, I wouldn't.
Yeah.
It is funny, actually, that Riker is such a dick to him. He's like, no.
I don't blame Riker.
Yeah, I mean, I guess watching the episode, Riker's the one where I'm like, you know, Riker did not turn out so hot.
No.
I guess in reality, Riker is probably the one who was the most pragmatic about the whole thing.
I don't think he didn't do anything that I don't think another normal captain would do.
Well, I don't know. I think that the privileges of being an ambassador were a little bit exaggerated with Riker, where he's not given his permission to go into the neutral zone, or not the Klingon zone.
Right.
And then they go anyways, and as an ambassador, admiral rather,
right,
he has full authority to take the Enterprise whenever he wants and just wheel off after a medical ship with his pals on it.
Yeah. Well, okay, other things that I think work. I like the character dynamics going on between Riker, Troy, and Worf. It seems a little late in the game to get this triangle moving, but it's great character dynamic and very revealing about all the characters involved. And I don't know, guys, was there nothing sadder than Riker asking Troy out for dinner at 10 Ford and she totally...
just shot him down.
Yeah, he's like, sorry, I've got plans.
That was cold.
Yeah.
I did kind of love, though, that in the alternate future where Troy has died and Worf mourns
her. You like that?
No, let me finish. And it's Worf
pretty,
is mourning her.
Morbid.
Wow, Cam.
And Worf is mourning her. That then establishes that every love interest Worf has ever had dies.
Yeah. That's true. Kalar, Jadzia, Troy. Well, he's bad luck.
Yeah, no kidding.
Speaking of Troy for a sec, I don't know if you guys found it interesting, but in the, I guess not the present day, but the normal timeline,
right,
where Picard's trying to figure out what's going on, I think it's the first time I've ever seen Troy actually engage in counseling.
No, she does it, I'd say, a reasonable amount.
Not nearly enough, though.
It's spotty.
Yeah, and that's the, I actually put in my notes. Like, I love it whenever I see Troy doing her job, and thank God, you know, it's the finale, and the writers were like, oh yeah, I guess we better have, you know, some scenes with Troy doing her job. And I like that they gave that to Beverly as well. She's often seen doing her job, you know, it's an obvious job, she's a doctor, but I mean, giving her like real character stuff to work with. We see that in the sick bay when she's talking to Picard about his medical condition, and then later on in the ready room where you know, they're getting kind of touchy feely, you know. It's good character stuff for Crusher, and she could have easily been forgotten about and left to be a Geordi LaForge. Actually, even Geordi gets, like, his eyeballs back, so...
Yeah. Everyone gets something to do, which is something that doesn't happen in every two-parter.
No.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, they kind of had to give everyone something to do in the finale. It would be pretty weird if, you know, Crusher was ignored like she was in whatever the last two-part we did.
Gambit,
yeah. Yeah, I mean...
Who had the least to do?
In this one?
In this one, yeah.
I mean, with Geordi, we never got to see him, like, in engineering, really. Not a lot.
I think it depends on the timeline.
That's true.
Like,
Troy had nothing to do in the future.
Geordi and Riker and Crusher had nothing to do in the past.
Yeah.
I think they didn't let Riker on. They just didn't want they didn't want him to shave his beard.
Yeah. Too many continuity issues.
I think Riker may have had the least to do.
I'm kind of thinking maybe Riker.
Yeah.
At least they gave him the, you know, getting shot down by Troy scene. So that was all right with me.
Getting back to the Troy counseling, though, it's something that I think really does pop up. I feel like we've seen Troy do counseling scenes in two-parters. And whereas the general series, you don't see it a lot.
Do you think it's just because they're like, hey, we have time to actually do it right and, like, show that she is a valuable member.
Yeah, so you get a scene like the Jellicoe scene, yeah. You know, where she's counseling him or he's kicking her out of the office or whatever.
Telling her to get a real uniform on.
Yeah.
Instead of just being an empath in peril.
Right, yeah.
That was the name of my band in high school.
Something I thought really worked was Q in this episode. I've said in the past that I really enjoy Q episodes where he has some, like, threat to him.
And he's menacing as opposed to just like, oh, what a pain in the butt.
Yeah, here I am wacky showing up at, like, with a mariachi band. You know, that's a fun moment, but you know
that's my Halloween costume.
Yeah, like, I really like that this, you know, echoes back to Encounter at Farpoint with him on the throne. Like, it's just such a great costume, and it's such an iconic moment from the first episode. And I like the seriousness of Q here.
Well, I like the fact that he admits that he's pushing Picard back and forth throughout time.
Yeah.
And he's doing it, I would like to say, somewhat strategically by trying to embarrass Picard whenever he can. Like,
right.
Engage! engage where, sir? Oh, sorry about that. You know, like, he's being kind of his Q-ish self while, like you said, like, bringing a certain threat level to him as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought all of his lines, I love all the Q episodes. They're some of my favorites. Like the 10 questions that he asks.
Yeah, I love that. Like, I wrote that. That was one of the most memorable scenes to me as a kid. And I've probably seen, this is probably the fourth time I've seen the finale. Mm-hmm. And I had kind of forgotten about that scene. And it was so mm-hmm. great, you know. And especially when he says, oh, that wasn't a yes or no question. All other questions, you have to give them up now. Sorry. It's just like, it's Q being kind of a dick, but, like, I dig it.
And I love at the end, you know, where he says, you know, the adventure or the trial never ends. And he says, you know, I'll see you out there.
Yeah, I might even drop by every once in a while.
Yeah. And now,
did he, Cam?
Yes, but not with Picard. Now, jumping off of that, watching it this time, I really felt by the end, we should not have seen Q again. You know, they bring him back for DS9 and for Voyager.
Well, they didn't bring him back for Deep Space Nine. He had already appeared by then.
Oh, right, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
but they do bring him back for Voyager.
Yeah. What do you think? I just feel this is such a strong ending to that character, his exit, you know, going back into the blackness of that entrance into that into the court.
I think if they brought him back for another adventure with the TNG crew, I could have been down with that.
Sure, yeah.
But the Voyager stuff, especially when they bring in John DeLancey's own son to play his son.
I look forward to talking about that episode one day.
Okay. I'm just like, really, guys? Like, yeah, I agree. I think he would have been best left here at All Good Things.
I just think his relationship with Picard is so important, and I just don't think that relationship works with another captain.
Well, there's a certain... I definitely think Mulgrew and DeLancey have chemistry.
Yes.
You know, but it's not the same power dynamic that you have with...
There's not the stakes to it.
Yeah, and as Data noted, it's very much the same relationship a master has to a beloved pet.
Right.
Yeah.
Just a metaphor.
Yeah, okay.
Do you think, you know, obviously we never saw Q again in the movies, right? Do you think that Q did pop in it to visit Picard kind of over the rest of his life? In sort of your own fan fiction mind?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. What about you, Tony?
Yeah, but he was with Bella from Twilight. And,
That's where your fan fiction mind...
And I gotta leave it there, okay, guys?
Oh.
Oh, my.
Yeah. What about you, Cam?
I think so.
Yeah.
I feel like... You know what? I think Q, once Picard stays retired and whatever, I think Q would just like to hang out with him sometimes.
Yeah,
have philosophical arguments.
You know, like, ruffle his feathers and...
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No?
No, I think...
That was it, with him and Picard?
I think so.
Do you think Q likes Picard?
I think he finds Picard amusing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very much how I find a beloved pet amusing.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think Q would have ever gotten along with Kirk?
Well, no, you know what my question is, do you think Kirk would have gotten along with Q?
Kirk did love talking computers to death.
Yeah.
So, like, I think he would enjoy sort of the philosophical aerobics required to kind of deal with a Q. he would, I mean, he definitely loves monologuing. So I could see that. I don't know, but I don't know if he's the type that would be able to meet Q on the level, the philosophical level that Picard can.
I don't anticipate Q taking as much of an interest in Kirk as he does Picard. And I wonder why, what it is that he found so fascinating about Janeway.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't
probably
quite get it.
Flagging ratings.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Advertising dollars.
Would you ever cosplay as those jury members?
I'm not a fan of the jury members.
I remember as a kid, they freaked me out. Like, they frightened me to death.
Yes, I agree.
Well, what would you cosplay as, Cam?
Oh, boy. Probably that future lawman or soldier that Q dressed up as in Encounter Far Point.
Okay.
How about...
The one that was, like, on gas or whatever.
How about Bella from Twilight?
That, too. Okay. That's my second choice.
We should talk later.
Oh, well, then. We'll take that off the air.
Is that why Tony came dressed as Q?
I'll see you out there.
That's right.
I want to talk about Crusher as the captain... or I guess Picard as captain of the Pasteur. I love this.
Oh yeah, and I love her like talking him down, saying, "Do not ever question my orders on the bridge ever again."
Yeah,
you know, like that's badass. You know, but do you think, I don't know, just her own fate? Look, this episode aired 22 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It took place 23 or 25 years in the future. We're approaching that point where the actors have nearly caught up to the ages of these characters. I don't know, do you picture Beverly Crusher or Beverly Picard, you know, commanding her own ship at this point, or is she having other adventures at Starfleet Medical?
I would like to hope that she did get to command her own ship, because we saw on the show that she was actually fairly decent at it.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Troy apparently couldn't get it right. Crusher was, like, really, really strong at it.
Although, do you think after what happens here, in which she takes this band of misfits onto her ship and gets her ship blown up, violating enemy space, she's ever getting another command?
Alternate future.
Okay.
Wiped out of existence.
Okay.
Good answer.
Speaking of Starfleet Medical, don't you think they have awfully loose lips over there if they're letting their friend, Dr. Leah Brahms, know that Picard has, like, this neurological disorder? That's how Geordi found out and came visiting him.
Or is it that Picard is such a celebrity in the future that you kind of know what's going on with him, like we do with celebrities now?
That would be an interesting thing, is what's on the newsstands, of a futuristic Paris. Has Picard been on the cover of Vogue?
Yeah.
Vogue.
I don't know. Like, can you name some, I don't know, military commanders for me, Cam?
Patton.
Some current military commanders.
Patton Jr.
Okay. I don't know, like, I... Sure,
Colin,
I mean...
Colin Powell.
Colin Farrell.
Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how much celebrity he carries, but...
I mean, there's so much talk about Kirk in other series. I just wonder if Picard would go on to become a kind of the celebrity captain.
Maybe a celebrity ambassador, as we found out that he became...
Yeah.
You know? Can you name some ambassadors for me, Cam?
No.
Well, could you ever see... Kirk is kind of like the Donald Trump of ambassadorship. You know,
he's got really small hands?
Yeah, he'd go... You know, he's loud and obnoxious.
Well...
He's not... Yeah, he's perhaps not the best diplomat versus...
Are you talking about Shatner or Captain Kirk?
No, but I like the idea that, you know, eventually Picard becomes a diplomat. Like, mm-hmm. That's something that he excelled at so well as a captain, so to see him, you know, end up with that post by the end of it, I find that intriguing.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. Something else I want to talk about that really works for me is the chronology of this episode, the hopping around in time. They really went for broke with this one in terms of structure. A lot of the time TNG can be really regimented in their story structure.
Yes.
This one, I don't know if it was the effect of, like, Reservoir Dogs coming out, like, 2 years earlier or whatever. That movie was very influential, but I love that Braga and Moore really kind of went nuts.
It was pretty tightly edited.
Yeah, it's fantastically edited.
Do you think the fact of the matter is that they were just so under the gun, like, to get this out as soon as they could? Because I think they were really writing this on the fly.
Same time as Generations.
Yeah, but I think they said that it took them a month to write All Good Things. It took them a year to write Generations. Which one do you think turned out better, guys?
I think obviously this episode.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was going to say, obviously, Generations.
Okay.
Just for that scene of Picard crawling through the rock pile.
It's the best climax ever.
Yeah, I mean, this episode makes Generations more of an embarrassment.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, you end on such an amazing note, which, I mean, is the Grace moment, like Picard at the card table. I love that moment,
yeah,
to the dissolve to, like, the ship, you know, flying off into the horizon.
I remember at the time hearing a lot of people saying that All Good Things was the Star Trek movie that should have been made.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if it would, how it would translate to the average person, but I mean, it has so much a stronger sense of storytelling, of character, than anything Generations really offered.
Even just like this solid kind of sci-fi premise behind it,
yeah,
that I didn't really understand, but
yeah, compare, like, you know, Picard's quandary here to the Nexus.
Oh, God.
It's not even on the same page,
no,
you know.
Well, let me throw this at you, and maybe we, in a future episode, we could dive further into it, Cam. But if you look at the narrative format of All Good Things versus What You Leave Behind,
mm-hmm,
narratively, you know, What You Leave Behind is a very straightforward wrap-up of, you know, that series, whereas All Good Things, it's a sci-fi story.
Right.
You know, which I dig. So it's good that they can go there and then do all that character stuff that I love so much, too.
And I love the image of the three Enterprises,
yeah,
in the anomaly. It kind of recalls Parallels a little bit, mm-hmm, but it's still awesome.
But, you know, speaking of beautiful ships, that shot, that opening shot of the USS Pasteur, mm-hmm, like just hitting that planet and then approaching that star, that was one of the most gorgeous shots of a ship I've ever seen in Star Trek before.
Yeah, like it looks like they really put some money into this episode.
I think about downtown, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, they probably closed off all of Cambridge.
Yeah.
Actually, what did you guys think of that? I really liked Data being an academic and having the chair of physics at Cambridge.
Yeah, I like that too, and I really appreciated that he had Angela Lansbury as his maid.
Jessa? Jessla?
What was that?
I don't know.
You're like, be our guest, be our guest.
Picard just asks for hot tea. Of course it's hot. Here's the thing. Speaking of Data, I love the fact that they showed that over those 25 years, he did grow. Like, he was able to smile, and he says that his maid makes him laugh.
Yeah.
So he may not have gotten his emotion chip, but he definitely, you know, had a better understanding of humanity. He seemed all the more human 25 years in the future.
Did Data win the prize for best state of sort of life in the future? I mean, Crusher's is pretty good, too.
Yeah.
But she is divorced from Picard, you know. There is some tragedy there. Data seems to have it pretty good.
Yeah. The only other argument you could make is maybe Riker, but he turned into kind of a jerk.
Yeah. I guess Geordi's not bad. He's got, you know, grown kids. He's married to Leah Brahms.
Really? I thought of the stories, I thought it was kind of appropriate that Geordi is still just kind of a schmuck. Like, he's, you know, he's got his eyes back through no action of his own. He just kind of married into it. He's got some kids that are probably going to exceed his accomplishments in every way. He's written a novel that all we know about it is the protagonist is kind of weak.
Flamboyant.
You know, and you could tell,
like,
Picard was just about to pump his tires. Like, I thought the main character was a little flamboyant, but, you know, he was, I wish I could know the line that was going to come after. Like, you know, I really like the way you used boxcars, Geordi.
Boxcars? Wow.
Never really showed that any affinity for creative pursuits.
No, not at all. Which is strange. Hey, look, you got 25 years ahead of you.
I feel like his novel would read like a Scientology recruitment manual.
I was thinking it'd be more like a textbook. Like, if you told me Geordi went on to become a fellow professor writing textbooks, I could buy that.
I do recall, like, this weirdo in high school. He wrote this story for our creative writing class. It's a sci-fi story. It was just nonsensical. He's very much kind of in that vein of, like, this guy cannot write. Like,
right.
Maybe Geordi just can't write, and Picard is being as nice as possible.
Maybe Picard's been reading his fan fiction.
Featuring Q and Bella.
Yeah, that's right. Geordi's one of those guys that has just been, you know, drawing buffalo warriors on DeviantArt and writing erotic fan fiction about all his crewmates.
Yeah, he's not actually married. He doesn't have any kids.
Yeah.
It's all just fan fiction.
No, he is married to the hologram Leah Brahms.
Oh, yeah.
Because we had talked in the past, Leah Brahms features into TNG in two of the most uncomfortable episodes.
Yes.
in the history of the franchise of Geordi's romantic interest in her. And then to find out in this alternate future that he's married to Leah Brahms is... he was married? No, they didn't actually put into Nemesis, right? He was originally going to be mentioned.
Yeah, and it wasn't even like a deleted scene. I think he's just sitting next to Guinan instead.
Right. Originally, it was going to be in there.
Well, okay, let me ask you this. What do you guys think about this possible future? Because for me personally, I don't like it. Like, I like the idea that there's other possibilities, and is this how I would want all the characters to end up? Not necessarily. I dig the fact that Data's still alive and that Crusher's got her own ship, but beyond that, I kind of feel bad for...
Troy?
Well, Troy's dead. Riker's a jerk. Worf's kind of a sad sack.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of liked Worf. I like, you know, all of the old Klingons that you ever see...
Yeah,
in TNG are all cranky old jerks, and just how having the scene where he's just pouting about being called out on trust and loyalty, I thought just sulking away
and saying like you always know how to use Klingon to get what you want.
That is good. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about the whole idea of getting the band back together?
Well, I mean, it's always going to be depressing when there's a future where, again, the band isn't together.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this was definitely, you know, this was it like, was it Star Trek 3 where they had to get, or was it Star Trek 6 where they had to get the group all, no, not Star Trek 6, where they had to get the group all together again.
I think it was Star Trek 3 for Search for Spock.
Right.
Or no, wait, sorry. Yeah, Star Trek 3, Search for Spock.
Yeah, so, I mean, that one, you know, wasn't as pessimistic as this one. But I enjoyed seeing them all get back together, but is that the future I want for these characters where they've kind of all gone their separate routes? And are kind of doing their own thing?
Yeah.
No, but maybe that's the most likely.
But, yeah, I have to believe so, because by the end of it, and the last we hear of, you know, Data's dead. Picard's still captaining the Enterprise. Troy and Riker, they're on the USS Titan. You know, I don't know, the people do start to go their separate ways. I think, honestly, it's just, that's part of life, though. People.
All good things.
Oh, all good things. I get it now. Oh, my God. It's all becoming clear here.
I like that they gave Q he got to mention the episode title.
Yeah,
that seems fitting.
All right. Well, guys, I don't know. Are there any other things we can talk about that work for you before we get into things that I don't know didn't quite fit? One last thing that I wanted to bring up though here is what about Tomalak? Do you think that actor is milking it or what when the Romulan appears on screen?
Well, that was an actor? Sorry, I thought that was an animatronic.
Like the Chuck E. Cheese sort of?
Yeah, it looked like the kind of thing that would attack you at a wax museum.
The makeup looked a little funky to me. It didn't quite look as natural as some of the Romulans do a lot of the time. I don't know. It looked a little more exaggerated and cartoonish. I don't really know what it was. But, you know, the actor, he was the guy who played the one-armed man in the Fugitive remake in 93, the Harrison Ford movie.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I thought he was fine.
Did he go method?
Sure. That's why you never saw his arm.
Yeah.
In this, so, you know.
There you go.
Yeah, but I liked seeing that character. I thought that was fun.
Well, it makes me think, like, why didn't they not have Tomalak back more frequently? I think this is only his third appearance or something.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
I don't know. We often question why TNG didn't bring back certain characters.
But it would just make sense, you know, if you're going to that Romulan well so often, why not go back to a character who works as, like, a good antagonist to the crew?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I was actually really glad that what they didn't do was just bring back a litany of fan favorites.
Hey, Barclay!
Hey, Moriarty, good to see you again! You know,
Samuel Clemens!
But I was genuinely surprised that there's no Guinan, though.
Yeah, that is actually, I think, a strike against it, maybe. Because Guinan should have had a scene.
Maybe Whoopi was busy.
Wow.
I think all her scenes were taken by Colin Meaney instead. She was supposed to be on the bridge.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I don't know. I dug the fact that they brought him back for so much, though. Like, they actually gave him a lot to do.
Well, at this point, he'd hit the big time. He's on DS9.
Yeah, the thing is, look, Picard gives him some duties in engineering, and he's like, I don't know if I can do this. And he's like, trust me, I believe you can. Because you made models as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Which freaked him out a little. He's like, how do you know that? Oh, it's in your Starfleet record. Really? Okay.
Yeah, Starfleet's now the KGB.
I think, you know, the Federation is far more totalitarian than people would like to think, personally.
Yeah.
We'll have to dig deep into that one of these days, Cam.
I think so.
I think we explored that in Star Trek IV.
With, did we?
We sure did.
Remind me. I've only seen this movie 14 times, but...
Yeah.
I did at the beginning, where they're all, the Starfleet's gathered
together. Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's very, very they're... militaristic uniforms.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, it's the Federation, and everybody's,
Everybody's armed.
Yeah.
And there's geisha dolls.
For some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Federation Council has all these military Starfleet members on it, which very bizarre.
Okay. Very Nicholas Meyer.
Yeah. Yeah. Guys, what doesn't work here for this final entry in Star Trek, The Next Generation?
Who wants to start?
Well, you know, I brought it up earlier. I'll just finish it up. I don't know. I wrote down Abe Simpson Picard. You know, like, I just kind of thought that it seemed a little bit of a caricature of, like, what an old man acts like.
I think I was a lot more kind to old man Picard watching this because I just recently watched Endgame and saw old Janeway.
Okay.
So, like, I was like, this is a model of restraint.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of the question I kept coming back to, and Tony, you had alluded to it earlier, but why would anybody do anything that this guy's suggesting? By the end of it, they are going along with him because he storms 10 forward, and they're like, oh yeah, anti-time.
Yeah, I couldn't... That's true. So, I mean, I thought the old Picard was kind of in the love it and hate it category for me. You know, I thought that he really... Yeah, it was a little sad to see Picard having lost basically all of his diplomacy.
Hmm.
You know, he's basically convincing people to do things only by, you know, due to the wonders of his past. And it would have been more convincing if when Crusher says, well, if Jean-Luc Picard wants to go on one last mission, they were just, you know, taking the medical ship around a planet a couple times.
Right.
Like, we've got to go really? Pick up some medicine, Jean-Luc.
Oh, no, Jean-Luc, this is the neutral zone. You know, we've just circled the moon once. And
yeah, as opposed
How could he tell? It's just outer space to him.
As opposed to, you know, basically commandeering a ship and driving it into the Devron system.
Right.
Enemy territory.
At warp 13.
I feel like Data's largely responsible for this. Because, like, Geordi seems very hesitant. He's kind of like, you're not well. Whereas, like, Data's kind of like, well, let's go.
Yeah. He has tenure. He can do what he wants.
I guess so. Why do you think Data is so willing to go? Whereas, like, I mean, you know, it's not just, like, bad writing. Because they are showing that Geordi is very hesitant.
You know, but that is very much in line with Geordi's character. He's very much kind of skeptic. He's...
Wet blanket
kind of character. Whereas Data is just like, oh, intriguing. Mm-hmm. You know, let me pursue this more. Data, by nature, is a very curious guy. So, yeah, makes sense to me.
Do you think that Picard gets there without Data? Because I feel like Data kind of greased the wheels a bit.
No, I don't.
You know,
because, like, he was struggling to describe a paradox until Data says, yeah, it's a paradox. Picard's like, yeah, it's a paradox. You know, chicken or the egg. I like how it came down to that.
Right.
So.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was kind of, in a lot of ways, you know, you think Picard in the future has basically lost all of his faculties.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of the crew is the own little, they have their own little faculty that they can lend to Picard's final mission. You know, Data being the smart guy. Geordi being the wrench. Riker being the bravado or whatever. I don't know. I'm sure there's a good metaphor in there somewhere.
Troy representing impending death.
Infinite.
The mortality in us all.
Well, guys, you talked about this. We have to bring it up, though. But what do you think about the abundance of technobabble throughout this episode?
I'm not a fan of technobabble. You know, rewatching, like right now, I've kind of been rewatching a lot of TOS, partly for our panel in Vegas, but also just partly because I really want to rewatch episodes I hadn't seen, you know, more than once.
Well, right now, our fallen co-host Benjamin Yong is making his way quite swiftly through the original series, and he's been messaging us about it, and has that inspired you at all to revisit some of these episodes, Cam?
I think I'm enjoying the episodes for different reasons than Ben Yong.
Oh, you mean Shirley Jackson?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I get a lot more, I think, out of this show. I love that whole that show so much. But I've really appreciated the lack of technobabble in the storytelling.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't mind a little bit, but how many times did they say static warp shell?
God. It just, but the thing is, like, I can kind of get an idea of what they're talking about certain times.
Yeah.
But when I know that the technobabble is going over my head, I'm just like, oh, the writers have no idea what... They're just teching their tech out of the tech.
I just don't...
Yeah, adding some MacGuffin to the MacGuffin.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why they can't have a character suggested and someone say, that's a good idea. It's always like, what if we do this? Well, if we took that and then modified it with this, well, it's like, oh my god.
Yeah, well, I like how they did that in three different timelines in this one.
Yeah, but, okay, going back to what works, Picard looking so badass as he's going back and forth through all those different timelines as, you know, they're figuring it out and making sure that this tachyon pulse will work. And then, oh, wait, it worked a little too well, caused the anomaly. Let's get this static warp shell up and going. I don't know, I loved how much they were able to switch the timelines around in a very effective way.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys think that the Picard in his... Virgin captaincy would have been able to convince the crew with that short speech to fly into a 400 million mile temporal,
excellent question,
temporal anomaly?
Well, I think that's far more likely than old man Picard convincing these people to go along with his plan, because this is like a very young green crew. Mm-hmm. You know, the highest ranking officers, you know, one Lieutenant Commander Deanna Troi.
Yeah,
the ship's counselor.
Not there yet. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, who's really going to stand up to him? Yar, apparently, she was calling him out, saying, like, can you give us something to go on here, sir? We've done everything you want at this point, but this looks crazy. And look, they eventually do go with it, so.
If I were Troi, I might have pulled him off duty.
Yeah?
Because, you know, he's even acting scattered when he's giving his speech, welcoming the crew or
he's
whatever.
He's, like, looking over his shoulder and,
yeah,
like.
Totally red alert for no reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, if I were Troi, I might be like, you know what? This isn't going well.
But do you think she could sense his emotions and feel how sincere?
Confusion?
Huh, sure. But she must have felt like sincerity, like he truly believes what he's saying.
Sure, but so do most lunatics.
Yeah, okay.
I think I may have to call Troi out for this one.
Okay. A younger Troi.
Yes,
you
young
know,
Troi.
Maybe not a present-day Troi.
Great feelings of joy. Great feelings of joy.
I feel...
I like how they brought back the season one uniforms.
Yeah.
That was a nice touch.
Did we spot any men in the skirts, or was it simply just women?
Just saw a woman.
I only saw a woman, yeah. So.
But what doesn't work, I do not like those future uniforms.
Really?
No. I think they're awful.
I don't have nearly that kind of investment in it, but...
I'm very invested.
Why are they so awful?
I just think they're hideous looking. Like, just ugly. Like, I think they belong in the same category as, like, the motion picture outfits.
I like the uniforms more so than I like the comm badges. I thought the comm badges were a little garish.
Over-designed.
Yeah. Like, a little too much going on. Give me something simple anytime. And I thought those uniforms were nice and simple. Yeah, I don't know. I have no problems with them.
They're very unflattering.
You know what I find funny is that you guys laughed at me when I suggested before we watched the episode that you should do an episode on fashions in Star Trek. I think Cam's line was, do you really want to talk about that for an hour? But it seems like you're doing pretty well.
Yeah,
so are you volunteering then to come to a fashion episode of the Star Trek podcast?
No.
Well, there's your answer right there, Tony.
Yeah, we will only do it if you come back as the guest.
I just want to do an episode dedicated solely to Bajoran clergy fashion trends. Like, those are distinct there.
That's our other podcast.
That's a niche market.
So is there anything else that didn't work for you guys? I really don't have that much.
Yeah, not that much. I mean, this is one of the all-time great series finales of television, period. So it just ties together a great adventure story with great character stuff, wrapping up. Look, this is a series firing at all cylinders, and if you're able to wrap it up like that, I mean, that's... Anybody could just hope for that.
Yeah. Tony, what are your final thoughts on all the things?
I agree. I mean, this is one of my all-time favorite Next Generation episodes.
Yeah.
And so it's tough to be harsh on it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. It's always easier reviewing, like, the terrible episodes or the really bad movies, just because you can sit there and crack jokes and just rip people apart for an hour. But this one's challenging because it's really enjoyable.
Yeah, we have a lot more to say during, like, the bad, spotty episodes than the real strong ones.
I mean, Tony, or even like Tony's Star Trek IV podcast episode is, I think, one of our greatest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree, though. Like, when we did, like, two-parters for, you know, like, I think we had a lot more to say, like, about unification, even. Because yeah. That had so many problems.
You know, which, and I don't know, what do you like doing more? Like, reviews of the strong episodes, because you get to watch the strong episodes, or reviews of, like, the weaker ones, because you get to really pick them apart and explain why this doesn't necessarily work.
I think I enjoy rewatching the strong ones more.
Yeah.
Than, say, Gambit. I think I enjoy podcasting more about the bad ones.
I think I enjoy podcasting more about the bad ones as well. Yeah. We've got a whole lot left to go with the DS9 and Voyager, so I'm not too worried about it.
I'm actually really excited to do the Voyager ones.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of promise.
Name one in particular.
I'm not going to say. I can't spoil it for the listeners.
Okay. It'll be, you guys will have to listen in.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, my final thoughts are, like, I really think this is just it's a perfect finale. Like, I really think, you know, it's been over 20 years since it's aired. How many finales live up to this one? Have the level of grandeur where you can watch All Good Things and say, yeah, this is one of the greatest episodes of TNG. I mean, how many finales? Even, like, I know you, Tyler, you and I kind of disagreed about how great the Breaking Bad finale was. But I still would never say the finale of Breaking Bad was, like, one of the top five greatest episodes of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, if you go through a list of, like, all-time finales, a lot of critics will, they'll name this one.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I know The Shield, that was a great one, because it really kind of makes you go back and rethink a lot of the series. Beyond that, I'm just thinking about, like, great finales. Seinfeld? Nope.
Sure. I mean, and going forward, we're going to find some really shaky finales, too.
Yep. Can't wait until we revisit These Are the Voyages.
Oh boy, an Endgame. Yeah.
Dear Lord.
Yeah, so I really think this is a very special hour and a half that succeeds on a level that it really shouldn't, given sort of the inconsistency of TNG Season 7.
Yeah. Okay, let me bring this up as well before we end.
Mm-hmm.
Picard touching everybody's shoulders. Did you guys notice that he was embracing people's shoulders nonstop throughout this episode?
I did. He was very tactile.
Yeah, and that's not the kind of Picard that you're used to seeing. Like, I wonder what that kind of represents.
Especially Geordi.
Yeah, no, at the opening, like, he is, like, just touching his shoulders all over. He does it to O'Brien, he does it to Crusher, he does it to Data.
Well, okay.
Is it representing, like, that character feeling more comfortable in his own skin and his own emotions?
I think so, because, you know, while it is an alternate future, we see at the end of, in the regular timeline, you know, Picard sits down at the card table and says, I should have done this a long time ago.
Yes.
And it's him opening up to other people on the crew. So while it is an alternate future, him being more touchy with people in the future is kind of like an extension of that. Like, the older Picard maybe has gained that sort of perspective, that these people really do matter in his life.
How often do you think Picard brings the entire senior crew into the observation lounge and he's like, hey guys, I know there's no proof of it, but I saved humanity. Just believe me. Let me tell you the whole story. You can thank me for saving humanity right here, right now. Just, I bet he blames it on Q. Like, once a week, they've got, like, another Q adventure that nobody else remembers except for Picard.
At that point, they lock him up and throw away the key. That's when he gets stripped of Admiral rank.
Yeah.
Or whatever, exactly. And they're like, he's insane.
He gets tea, Earl Grey, warm, so he doesn't burn himself. He doesn't really know what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, before we wrap up, we should really just acknowledge this is 100 episodes of podcasting.
Yeah.
This is a very special episode, really. I mean,
are you guys wrapping it up at 100?
Yeah, we're done.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We're done.
We had the finite number that we wanted to hit. From here on out, it's only bonus episodes that we're doing.
We're not actually showing up for the Vegas panel.
Well, you got that two-digit counter. I told you should have aimed high.
But we just want to thank everyone who listened to the show, who sent us emails, voicemails.
Hate mail,
everything. You know, the mysterious moderator, wax on my face. You know, Mike, we've always appreciated all the email we've gotten. And, you know, we've really enjoyed just putting this out. You guys coming along on our, frankly, insane journey.
And I never contemplated, oh yeah, when we get to 100 episodes, it'll mean, it's just nothing that I thought about.
Right.
Kim, I don't know, what's stopping us from hitting 200 episodes, aside from us, you know, having a really, really harsh, you know, fallout.
Right before the Vegas panel.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, you know, our nerves get to us. And
maybe a temporal anomaly.
Yeah.
Hey, crazy, you know, old Tyler will show up and I'll be like, oh,
you
no.
You need to save the day, Tony, with your static warp shell. So.
No problem. Maybe a tachyon inversion or something.
Yeah, so thanks for joining us for the previous 100, and you know, we've got a lot of cool stuff coming up. We're not resting on our laurels. We've got some ambitious ideas that'll be coming up.
I've been resting my laurels this entire time, Cam.
I didn't even know you owned any laurels, Cam. Yeah.
We've been phoning it in for the last 99.
I wing it every single episode.
They were telling me they just got sponsored, so there's going to be a lot more Mountain Dew references.
Audible.com.
Yeah, it's the Mountain Dew Red Alert. Yeah.
Yes, very much so. So I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com.
Yeah, and also, guys, Star Trek Beyond opens up. Next episode, we'll be reviewing it. Hopefully, we can get some special guests in on it. It's going to be a fun evening. Cam, are your hopes up high at this point? Because I went in very low expectations the past year and a half while they're making this. Now the reviews are coming out through the roof. Now I'm worried my expectations are too high.
My expectations aren't high, but they're higher than they were. Like, I'm anticipating a fun movie, but I'm not ready to commit to the idea of getting another Wrath of Khan.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree there. Yeah. Okay, well, you'll get our full thoughts in just a few short days.
I'm anticipating a good movie.
So am I. Just a solid adventure.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay, so you can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Visorless Jordy Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's REPORTON, N as in number 100, N as in neutral zone, N as in no dinner with Riker, N as in no more ends.
Okay then, and Tony?
You can't reach me, you can't find me, don't try.
Okay, well until next time.
N as in Nurse Ogawa, that scene with her losing that baby, that's really...
That's awful.
That's awful.
That's how you want to end our 100th episode?
Well...
Happy 100, guys.
We'll see you for 101. So until next time, the arena is closed.
Complete.